Hi, and welcome to the first Scattered Cells anime podcast, episode number one. I am your host, Michael Huang, and I also have with me as my co-host, Raymond Hugh.
Hey, what's going on, man?
He's reporting all the way from, why don't you actually talk a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you got into anime, and I'll follow up and say a few words about myself.
All right, well, I'm Ray, and I'm originally from Taiwan, because I lived there for like 12 years or something, yeah, and then I went to States, like, 1989, and, you know, all that boring history until college time, which I actually started watching my first anime on TV. Actually, that's not correct. That's not true. When I was a kid, I read some manga translated into Chinese, and I watched Doraemon, you know, the cat without ears thing.
Yeah, I remember Doraemon.
Right, yeah. And some early those times, these were basically illegal copies that practically everybody was running on the street. And after I went to the States, like, I had very little contact with anime or manga because for a longer time, they just didn't have much of it. You know, like, some people will bring in Dragon Ball Z comic from Asia or from Asian stores, but it was like, okay, you know, like, and in 1995, the first featured anime film that I saw was Ninja Scroll.
Ah, remember? Yes. I do. I saw that with you, actually, I remember. It was, I think I actually watched it with you, if I remember correctly.
Well, we didn't go to college. Well, I don't know if we watched it together, but I know, like, in college I watched it.
Yeah, when I was visiting your house, remember? Yeah, I think I actually saw your copy. And, well, anyway, go on.
Right. You probably saw my copy, but anyway, yeah. So that's the first thing I got in, and that was 1995. And afterwards, my first real anime series, which I finished, was, surprisingly, Sailor Moon. Sailor Moon! Sailor Moon!
You're not the first, believe me. You're not the first guy that I know that got into anime through Sailor Moon.
And Sailor Moon is a really good show, damn it! It talks about friendship, talks about forgiveness, talks about understanding, da da da. Okay, that was gay. But anyways, that's the first anime that got in, and I finished the whole series, and I have to say, for a shoujo magical girl comedy, action heroine thing, it was pretty good. And that's how I got first got into the anime. And then later, I watched more interesting things like, ta-da, classic Evangelion, good, yep. And
Wonderful
Nadesco, right. That's where Kurashima Hoko is it? That's her debut. Mm-hmm. And she's still very good, I think. Yes. Oh, yes. And that's how I got into anime, I guess.
What do you say you like in anime that you can't find in other kinds of entertainment or movies or TV shows?
Well, you could stretch it as much as you can. Sorry, that's life message going. And you can find something that you don't necessarily find in... Actually, it's hard to say what it is. I just have to say that I just like it, I guess. It's something about things moving as pictures that's attractive.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was Roger Ebert who, in his review of Grave of the Fireflies, which he considers one of, you know, the greatest movies of all time, he says that the kind of story that happens in Grave of the Fireflies couldn't possibly work as a live-action film because you'd be distracted by, like, these little children who are actually on the screen, like real little kids. But, like, when it's drawn, you know, you can focus on kind of the subject that's at hand rather than, like, the suffering of the little actors. Does that make sense? Like,
yes, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, it's as if it were live action. The live actionness of it would be distracting, but that's basically how what he says in his they actually included that as an extra on the DVD, like Roger Ebert actually talking about why he likes the movie so much. But anyway, anyway, a little bit about me. My name is Mike Huang. I currently live in the United States. I am of Taiwanese heritage. My parents are both also from Taiwan, but I have never lived there. I got into anime in college, much like most people here in this country have. And it was actually Neon Genesis Evangelion that got me into anime. I'd actually seen a few anime prior to that. Like, I'd seen all of the Lotus Wars television show, Akira, and Ghost in the Shell, and none of them impressed me. I have to say, like, Lotus Wars was unbearably cheesy. I remember I once showed it to my Dungeons & Dragons playing friends, and we all had fun, like, heckling it and talking about how Parn, you know, the main warrior, was definitely a level one warrior. And,
that's right.
Level one. And, like, and I found Akira and Ghost in the Shell at both at the time to be insufferably pretentious, which is why it's probably kind of strange that I took a liking to Evangelion so much, because people accuse Evangelion of being exactly the same thing.
Infinitely more pretentious, even more, I'm mad.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think it's probably because, and this is really related to why I got into anime, I think in anime, they're allowed to tell certain kinds of stories that you don't see so much in the Western media. You know, Evangelion was probably the first story I encountered that was really about a real emotional, you know, depressed person presented in a really compelling way that acknowledged kind of both at one level, the emotional repression, and also kind of the failure of somebody like Shinji. And I think, you know, in my mindset at the time when I was 18, I was a bit able to identify with it. And you know, and ever since that, you know, that's kind of colored the kinds of series that I tend to like. I tend to like drama a lot. I tend to like stuff that's, you know, focuses on character development. And I'm also a sucker for anything with large themes and, like, references to, I don't know, like, you know, religion or history or philosophy or anything like that.
Or anything that can be pretentious.
Exactly. Anything that I can cast a pseudo-pretentious or pseudo-intellectual air on, I'm probably going to like these days.
Christian, too bad I might add.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm in seminary, so, yeah. And so if you the purpose, by the way, of this podcast is not to be an evangelistic tool, but once in a while you're going to hear me go in a little bit more detail about the religious aspects of the show, or especially why some shows just simply get certain parts of religion wrong. And
like,
so that's
Evangelion.
Like Evangelion. And though you could probably write an entire paper on Evangelion, honestly, but aside from that, I'm actually seriously thinking about doing it, because there's a lot of really interesting like things with Kabbalah and Gnosticism that are actually worth exploring. And hey, I went to a serious academic theology conference where one panelist was talking very seriously about, here is where the Green Lantern references a Bible verse. And
okay, this guy's going to be a pastor, so don't mind him, okay?
Yeah, well, and I found that, yes, actually, anime is a really interesting and really effective way to connect the young Asian youth. So I have all kinds of excuses for why I still continue to watch things like Black Lagoon when I'm 26 years old. So, yeah.
You know, Black Lagoon is like one of those Hollywood action movies. So that's not so bad.
We're going to talk about that a little later. I actually think it's a little better than the Hollywood action movie, especially in the more recent episodes. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. And so what would you say actually some of your favorite recent anime has been? Like,
well, off the top of my head, and what we just talked about, the Black Lagoon.
Black Lagoon is great.
That's right. That is one of the best action anime I've seen recently, anyway.
I have to agree, actually. It's certainly the best I've seen since Cowboy Bebop, but we're going to go a little further.
Oh, Cowboy Bebop. There is something that goes on forever. For a 26-episode series, there is something that goes on forever.
Well, yeah, I would say that, I guess we'll talk a little bit about how there's kind of the way the shows are set up are a little bit differently. But
I guess another one will be, I don't remember if I was finished. Anyway, just kidding. For another one, I will have to go with, you know, like my reference, like my preferences are all like action stuff. But if you see recently, Let's see, I can't think of anything recently right now. I guess, like, another action series I would recommend, and a lot of people will say, is Noir.
Noir. I love it. Noir.
Noir. Nice and stylish. There's nothing wrong with it. Shoot 'em up. Power up the body count. Love it.
Yeah, I haven't watched the whole series, and you were the one who introduced it to me, so I really need to get working on that. I know my friend Zong, you know, our friend Zong, he really loves that show, too, so he's a... And so he got really got into it. For me, my favorite recent stuff, I'd say, I've really been enjoying Welcome to the NHK recently. It's gotten better and better and better. It's certainly, for me, it's taken the place of Evangelion as one of the best depictions of real emotional crisis that I've seen in anime. And it's really quite harrowing in the more recent episodes. It starts as a black comedy, but it gets more and more and more and more serious and more realistic, and it's really, I really feel really deeply for the characters in that show. I'm also very fond of Honey and Clover for similar but somewhat different reasons. It's got more, a lot more humor to it, though in the second season it also gets quite heavy as well. But
this guy just can't convince him to watch it, dude. I swear, it's like, I got a demo, and I was like, no. And I went to school, and I went to School Rumble 1, and that was great. And I went to School Rumble 2, and I still think it was pretty good. There we go.
How far are you in? How far did you get in School Rumble 2 so far, actually?
Done. Absolutely done. Finished everything last night.
What did you think of the last couple of episodes, like the last half of the second season? I felt like it was kind of a letdown, to be honest.
They were trying to add some romance stuff to it and all that crap, and I was like, okay, it's not that much of a degradation from what it was before. I mean, they have to go somewhere. But quite honestly, these people's relationships have to go somewhere, right? So they tried.
I think in the manga is still going on, actually. The manga's focus is comedy rather than romance, so it's like the reason why it's still going on is because the relationships don't resolve, and you know, the moment the relationships resolve, the story is over. So that's like the moment it has to end, and so
that's like this regular sitcom. Think about it.
That's exactly what it is. It's
Ross and Rachel got together on season 3. There wouldn't be 10 seasons of Friends.
Exactly, and so. I mean, that's exactly what School Rumble is. It's a sitcom. It's a lot like – really reminds me of Urusei Yatsura or Ranma, one of those really long-running comedies. They're basically taking, you know, a simple concept, and then they're just running it to the ground, really. But I thought School Rumble was a lot more inventive, I think, than a lot of, you know, shows of that genre for a while. Though I think it kind of – for me, it jumped the shark in the – Magical Girl episode kind of jumped the shark. I felt that was a bit contrived. I thought it could have worked, I think. Right. It really could have been hilarious. I mean, the first, you might remember, do you remember the episode in early on in the second season where they're all trying to come up with ideas for the school play?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That made me laugh so hard. That was the first time the Magical Girl appeared, actually. And that was hilarious, but then when they actually try to stretch it out into a 20-minute episode, it doesn't work. It works as a joke. It just doesn't really work as a story.
It's basically a one-time joke.
Yeah, exactly.
What is that other school show that I really like, that we really like?
Azumanga Daioh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. They don't make him like that anymore, I know. That's just a wonderful, wonderful piece of work.
I don't know, you just get to love every one of them.
I know.
You just love it, all these people.
it's beautiful, I know. It actually made me feel really sad and wistful at the end because it was ending. Not because it was a sad story, but it's because you're really sad to see, like, no more of these characters. I know the guy who wrote the manga, he has an ongoing series right now called Yatsuba. I don't know if you've seen it before, but...
Oh. I don't know. I've heard of it.
It's like, it's about like a really weird, like 5-year-old girl who says like all these, you know, very strange things all the time and being really, really, really cute. So if you really like Chiyo-chan, you know, and Azumanga Daioh, like you'll probably like Yatsuba.
If I actually translate it here, incidentally, a lot of manga that isn't out in States yet are out here. Like, Genshiken. Now, there's something that any otaku have to watch.
Yeah, I definitely. I agree. I saw Genshin. I did not really appreciate Genshin, to be honest, until I saw it at an anime convention. That is the place to watch it in. Is in a room full of other otaku laughing your ass off. That's like the real experience. That's like the.
Yeah, gotta watch out at the end of the convention. Well, we're with your old tackle friends, which may be listening right now.
This is for all of you out there. We welcome all your comments and your emails and questions, and as we launch into this new little venture. And so I guess we should probably wrap up the bios or intro section that went on a little. I
Let's
guess
move
that
on.
let's
Let's
move
move
on.
on. And
And
before we
so.
move on, let's just say you guys are gonna be the coolest people that's leading the freaking future. Just look at Japan. See? There's an otoku phenomenon, for example. And that's a geek dating a girl. So for anybody who's beating on you right now, you get to laugh at their asses later. Of course, we could be a couple of losers who really can't predict the future at all. Hey, but hey, who cares, right? Let's move on.
All right. So, the next section that we're going to feature is a little bit about some recent anime news. In the future, we are going to have some space for answering your questions and your comments. So, but for now, for today, our first episode, we're just going to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on in the anime world. Most of the news that I'm going to be getting is from the Anime News Network website, which just recently got a really nice facelift, and also from the AnimeNation.net news section. And so this week actually looks like it's been a rather slow news week, to be honest. I had to kind of dig a little bit further into the December archives to find anything that I thought was a little noteworthy, but probably the most interesting thing that's come out is that ADV. Just announced that they licensed the Oh My Goddess television show season 2, and they actually announced it exclusively through the Anime News Network website. Like the Anime News Network got the scoop on it. So I actually haven't really watched most of the anime, the Oh My Goddess television show so much, but I know you have. So what do you think? Can you say a few words about that?
Well, let's just say if you love the manga, you'll love the show. Otherwise, it's really slow.
I
And
see.
that rhymed. But anyways, yeah, you talk, you, it was, it came out in the late 80s as a manga. The manga came out in the 80s. It's a typical magical girlfriend thing. I think it got popular in the early 90s. And then after a while, it kept going because yes, he kept on coming up with new and amusing ideas. And for a lot of people, it just turned into a healing type of manga, you know, because the two main characters are nice and positive. And Beldandy's, well, come on, you know who Beldandy is, right? Okay, if you don't, she's the goddess, main slash magical girlfriend. And she's got two funny little sisters. One is kind of a horny older sister who drinks a lot and loves destroy things. And one of the little sister also destroys things, but she makes up a lot of crap. Or, put it nicely, inventions.
Yes. I'm really fond of Schooled, the inventor girl, because she's like,
That's
what
right,
she
that's
actually
the
does is
proper pronunciation of it. Can
Schooled,
you try that
yes.
again?
Schooled. Schooled.
That's right.
Schooled. And she was a. And I think she's almost like the patron saintess of programmers because what she her job it's her job like to fix the big world computer Yggdrasil, and the way she debugs things, quote unquote, is by actually t literally taking a mallet and like bashing these rabbit like bugs that come out of the system. And
Well, something you would like to do when you were a programmer.
that's right. I used to be a programmer for a couple of years, and I can tell you that debugging is one huge pain. And oh man, if it only were as fun as they made it seem on Oh My Goddess. Oh man,
Or
maybe.
as physically interesting.
Yeah, they actually made a. There's like this little DOS game or this little Windows game you can download, which is just school. Like you play school bashing. Like little bugs, and it's really fun. It's actually surprisingly addictive.
Yes. Now that was a good game. It's better than programming.
Oh, yeah. Anything
you earn a lot of money programming, so, oh well.
Anything's better than programming. Yeah. Anyway, and it looks like, yeah, it's, the thing is that actually ADV is actually the third company that's put out some sort of Oh My Goddess or Oh My Goddess, Amigami-sama, whatever you want to call it, product. They the first season was actually released by Media Blasters here in the United States, and Anime Ego were the ones who put out the OAV. The OAV of Oh My Goddess was actually one of the earliest anime that I ever watched after I'd gotten into anime. So that show actually holds something of a special place in my heart. And I remember I actually watched it with my first college roommate, and he actually thought it was kind of interesting. And he didn't know anything about anime, and I barely knew anything either. I was just downloading all these real video files left and right from the local network, and you know, just finding almost anything I'd get my hands on. And yeah, he didn't think it was that bad.
Yes, yep. That was pretty good. Now let's get on the news with the news.
All right. Okay. Second news item is that the founder of Harmony Gold, he's an Italian man. His home and his properties were recently searched by the FBI at the request of the Italian government. Now, if you're not familiar with Harmony Gold was the company that initially licensed and brought Robotech here to the United States. You might remember that Robotech, of course, is the butchered and spliced version of Macross. Exactly. And of Macross and two other shows put together and, you know, mercilessly dubbed by a man that many anime fans not so affectionately call Uncle Carl. And Carl Masek. But the founder of Harmony Gold, you see, apparently he's in trouble not because of anything anime related, but because he and the former Italian Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, were involved in some shady media deals, and right now the Italian government is actually cracking down on corruption.
Oh,
and they actually...
That's a first.
And believe it or not, Silvio Berlusconi himself, the former Prime Minister, is under indictment, and so they're actually getting a lot of his aides in trouble as well. And apparently the guy who founded Harmony Gold is one of his aides. Berlusconi is the richest man in Italy, and so he has a lot of money to throw around, but he's out of office, and so the prosecutors are going after him now. And
apparently he's out of the family then.
Yep, he is. Sure is. And there was actually also, next item, is there was a really interesting article in Reason magazine. Reason's kind of the libertarian magazine, about how fan subbing basically created the anime industry here in the United States. And it was actually titled, you know, how piracy helped the industry or something like that. It's like how piracy was good. And as somebody who got into anime through illegal, like, pirating, because my friend gave me a copy of Evangelion, and then has proceeded to actually buy two versions of Evangelion on DVD since then, I can definitely attest in my own personal experience that, yes, piracy is good for anime.
It helps people to buy something good.
Yeah.
Even me.
Yeah, and it's like, because really, I mean, the thing with anime, I think, especially with television shows, is that they're really long. And if you had to buy like all 26 or 52 episodes or something before you even knew what it was about, it would be kind of hard to get into it, I think. You need at least some sort of try before you buy kind of policy, I think. And like, I'm really looking forward to, I hope one day what they'll do is that, like, right now on Apple's iTunes Music Store, you know, you can buy individual episodes of television shows like Lost or Saturday Night Live or any of your favorite television shows for $2. I really hope one day they move to where that kind of model for anime is. You can just buy a single episode for $2 or something like that, and you could use that to try it out, like a couple episodes, without too much monetary investment. And I hope that would encourage people, actually.
I just got this idea. They can work with those companies who does art and whatever. And for people who wants playing every day, like just media files, they get the media files for really cheap, for cheap. And then for them to say, but we like some of the artworks, package the artworks, work with the Japanese people. They love it. The Japanese creators will love it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I know sometimes they like to put out deluxe box sets, both here and in Japan, that includes things like artworks and pencil boards and other things like that. Like, I remember getting the Boogie Pop Phantom box set that was, which is awesome. It included, like, a pencil board, like, two soundtracks, like, trading cards, and some other cool stuff. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely worthwhile, I think, if you can afford it. It's, I got that when I still had a job and still had money, so.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's difficult to be a seminary, but you can still watch anime.
I can still watch anime. I'm actually part of an anime club, and I'm probably going to be plugging them, and I'm actually going to be asking my anime club members to produce an audio ad that we can air on this show. So, so for those of you in the Los Angeles area, come and check us out, Anime Souffle. I'll give you a link in the show notes to our meetup.com page.
Anyway. It feels like some of these people are so even having a conversation, and, that is.
Yep. Yeah, I think I might be inviting some people from our club, like maybe our club president, to maybe be another co-host or be guest on this show in the future. So.
Yes, and let's move on.
All right, and the final news item that I wanted to talk about was about Gaino no Senki, which is the new Studio Ghibli film, which is based on the Ursula K. Le Guin's Earthsea trilogy. It's actually getting a UK release, and so it's going to be put out in English in some form, but it's not going to be released here in the United States, and it's really interesting why. You see, the Sci-Fi Channel actually did an adaptation of the Earthsea novels a couple of years back. An adaptation, actually, that the author, Ursula K. Le Guin, was very unhappy about. She wrote really scathingly about it. I actually remember when she wrote about it in Slate.com, and she's really unhappy about it. But the problem is that the Sci-Fi Channel owns the rights to any Earthsea adaptation for the next several years. And so America will not see the Earthsea Ghibli movie for at least until 2009.
You know, anytime they say America, I associate with the evil now. Evil, I'm American.
Well, politics aside, it seems that the and it's really interesting actually about what Ursula K. Le Guin thinks about the Ghibli Earthsea movie and some of the politics behind that one as well. Hayao Miyazaki, Goro, the guy, because it's done by Miyazaki's son, for the big cheese, you know, Hayao Miyazaki. He's the one who did Totoro, you know, Kiki's Delivery Service and Spirited Away.
Yep.
You can now call him an Oscar-winning director. But his son, apparently, who didn't have any filmmaking experience, like before this, he was the director of the Ghibli Museum in Tokyo, and he decided to make a film as well. And apparently his father was very unhappy about that decision.
So
his father kept trying to dissuade him, and he's made some rather not quite so veiled comments in the press about how he's not really happy about what his son is doing. And not only that, Ursula K. Le Guin herself, she doesn't like this adaptation that much better than the Sci-Fi Channel one, even though she really hates the Sci-Fi Channel one. So we'll see.
Did the rights for it?
Actually, this is also a really interesting story as well. Hayao Miyazaki asked for the rights 25 years ago. But Ursula K. Le Guin turned him down at the time. 25 years.
Oh.
It would have been one of his earliest movies if she had agreed. And but she was really afraid, especially with the technology at the time, that it would look really cheesy.
Oh.
And so she waited until she felt the technology was good enough for an adaptation, and that's why she gave Sci-Fi Channel permission. Because she felt that maybe they could do a good job, but she felt they did a really bad job. I don't know. You've never read the Earthsea novels, right?
No. You're the fantasy guy.
Yeah, the Earthsea novels actually hold a very special place in my heart. They were very influential on me because I like to write fantasy sometimes, and my first fantasy novel was very heavily influenced by the Earthsea trilogy. And I read them when I read the Earthsea books when I was in sixth grade. And I used to go to the public library all the time checking out fantasy books left and right, and you know, the Le Guin novels were some of my favorites, and they've stood the test of time. They're 40 years old roughly, and they're very inventive. I really like I really like them, and I haven't actually reread them in a while, but I really want to reread them before I watch Getto no Senki. So
Yeah, but these novels don't have missiles shooting out, half naked babes, and people shooting guns. Now, do they? Now, that's another reason why anime is interesting, and it's that it doesn't have to be in a freaking film. I've seen movies.
I wonder what Ursula K. Le Guin would have thought if they had added giant robots with missiles and, yes, half naked girls. I would love to see the look on her face. Love to see the look on her.
Becomes another Anne Rice, probably.
Oh yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway, that does it for the news for this week. Anyway, so now we're going to move on to the review section, and this will be, and every week we're going to agree, we're going to try at least to review at least one anime together. In the future, we may have some duels or combats in which we disagree on something, or maybe we also take two different shows that we've watched and see what we think about them. And we're going to
Let's
try
get
our best.
ready to rumble! Just kidding.
And we're going to try our best in this review to avoid spoilers. Though in the future, I think we're going to have a spoiler review feature in which we actually reveal the ending and try to talk and analyze the ending a little bit. Because especially with anime endings, you never know what it's going to happen.
That's right.
Oh yeah, I mean they're all really into that metaphysical crap that I like so much. So metaphysical crap
Especially
that I like.
watch anything for Arnold. Watch out for anything for Arnold.
Or Gainax in general, really.
Yes,
Gainax.
exactly.
Yep.
Anyways.
And Anno's actually rewriting Evangelion. You hear that, right?
Oh dear.
Yeah, I
Oh
know.
dear.
He's actually pledged to get rid of all the stuff that made me like Evangelion in the first place, like flashing text and like head trips and stuff like that. He wants to actually make the story more clear about things.
Oh.
Yeah.
That I
Good
think is
luck, I
going to
say.
be.
Good luck. Good luck, I say. Good luck.
And I said death blow to his career, but anyways.
Anyway, the anime we'll be reviewing today is Black Lagoon. And Black Lagoon is a show that has really surprised me. I am not a huge fan of action. I like action when I see it. I especially like it when it's really well animated and well done. Like I really appreciate it, especially even when I wasn't that impressed overall. I really liked some of the action that was in Ghost in the Shell and in Akira when I first saw it. And I especially, and one of my favorite shows has always been Cowboy Bebop, which is probably, I think, the best point of comparison that I can draw with Black Lagoon is that it's pretty much the successor in my mind to Cowboy Bebop, though it has many important differences. But in actually,
I don't
you
even
remember.
know how you think that's the successor to Cowboy Bebop. I
Yes,
don't even know how.
it's really the well, you're the one who actually introduced me to this show, so
Yeah.
talk a little bit about this show and what you think about it.
Well, I heard Black Lagoon was made by that famous studio, Madhouse.
Madhouse, yes.
I think it's made by Madhouse, and
Yeah.
somebody said, "Well, it's like noir, but except it's more raw." I said, "Wow, anything with shoot 'em up, pile out the body counts, and incoherent and pointless and senseless pointless plots, go right ahead." So I just indulged myself to a play of Black Lagoon episodes. But found interesting in the beginning, I didn't watch one episode at all. I just kept downloading them. I was, that's right. I tend to do a lot of that. I was indulging myself with one of those crappy shows about, oh, I don't know, some girl who wants to be an actress. She's in high school, and what's that? It's one of those shows. Some girl, actress, high school, bunch of
Wreck?
girls, and huh?
Is it Wreck? Wreck? REC? REC?
Oh, yeah, I was watching Rat too, but she was in high
Okay.
school.
Oh,
Oh, yeah,
okay.
that's right. Maybe that's the show. That's the show I was watching, was Rat.
Wreck? Wreck?
They found
Yeah.
some new girl to play the
Yeah.
seiyuu, the voice
Yeah, it's about the
actress.
voice actress. Yeah, it's about the
That's
voice
right.
actress.
And it's
I
interesting
saw Fields
because,
did that.
well, because Genshiken and all this otaku stuff came out, so people start
Right.
watching, wanting to know what's going on behind the scenes. Anywho, And one day I just decided to watch Boyagoon, and lo and behold, I've never stopped.
Yeah.
What do I like about it? I like the fact that Levy has big breasts and have guns. And,
That never fails.
But I think the very interesting point is that in the beginning, he came from this man guy who's just some salary man, really. He's some salary man, came out of some company, and he was kidnapped because somebody wanted the secrets he was carrying. It was just his very lucky day.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I wasn't saying anything.
And the point of view, he was the guy with the point of view, really. It wasn't that he, you know, and then he just adapted to the environment. Somehow there was some sort of parallel saying that the Japanese working environment, especially in big corporations, is kind of like the jungles or the corruptions in that city, from Rowan No Clock or something like that.
It's translated in my fan subs, Ranapur.
Right?
Yeah. It's like supposed to be some sort of like Southeast Asian, like vaguely Cambodian or Thai city.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I found it really interesting how he's, most of the time they portray Rock, that's the name of the salaryman, as kind of as a weenie. But once in a while, he'll start kicking butt. And once in a while, he'll start coming up with really good ideas.
That's right.
And he's actually a lot smarter than like a lot of his colleagues in the Black Lagoon Company like give him credit for. And I actually really think the sexual tension between him and Revy is really delicious. And I was really expecting it to be a brainless action show and to do it really well, because that's what all the initial reviews that I read basically said.
And that's the reason why I watched it in the first place.
But it really surprised me with the amount of intelligence and the amount of heart that got put into it, and especially in terms of the character. I think what the turning point of the show for me was actually, you know, and of course it does all the action stuff really, really well. And in that sense, it is really kind of the successor to shows like Cowboy Bebop, which both had a lot of great action and also had some really interesting characters and things to say by the end.
Yeah, that's basically the only connection that I see.
Actually, I think the basic setup is a little bit similar. It's also, I mean, instead of bounty hunters, the setup of Black Lagoon is about a bunch of modern pirates. They're a lot more amoral than the crew of the Bebop. Like, especially the main attraction of the show, I think Revy, the short-shorted, you know, gunslinger girl. She's really, really mean, and she's definitely not like Faye. You know, she's not just coquettish. She's really, really a real cold, heartless killer deep down. But we actually see a real interesting glimpse of her character later on in the first season. And there's like this real character revealing moment when they're in the bottom of a submarine, which I thought was, I felt that it was a turning point in my opinion of the show. You know, before that, I thought it was just a fun show, but after that, I saw that the creators were at least trying to dig a little deeper into who these people were and how they interact. I think actually the interaction, people have been praising, you know, the interaction between Rock and Revy as being wonderful sexual tension. And yes, it's definitely there. But those are just two really good people, I think, to pair up as leads. They complement each other really well. And I think actually as it gets into the second season, that gets stronger and stronger. So basically...
Okay, before you put everybody to sleep, let me tell you why I also like it. Aside from all these reasons, Garavi, she kicks ass, she's absolutely an evil bitch. That's what you want in a girl character. No heart, no love, and one time she even came up to Rock and said, hey, you wanna have it? Or something much, much rather than that, because we're kind of on publicly, so I can't say anything about it, but she kicks ass. She takes them out, she kills a bunch of guys, and she's absolutely cold-hearted, evil bitch. With a character, of course. And, of course, the action is absolutely
perfect. Oh, yeah.
Please continue.
Absolutely. I mean, we can definitely see... It's really interesting how a character like that is actually really appealing, because if you met somebody like that in real life, I mean, you'd be scared out of your wits, wouldn't you? I mean, you'd be scared out of your... Like, if somebody like that...
Well, you don't meet that yet. Well, that's anime for you. You probably will never meet him.
Certainly not. I would certainly hope so. You wouldn't. Though I guess you would probably want somebody like that to be your bodyguard. I think there's like an old saying that there are three kinds of people. What? There are sheep, there are dogs, and then there are the sheepdogs who protect the sheep from the dogs. The people, the sheepdogs are the ones who are willing to bare their teeth and to go fight the dogs in order to protect the sheep. And so, and you would want somebody like Revy to be your personal bodyguard, I'm sure, if you're facing some dangerous.
Yeah, but she's the wolf. But she's more like the wolf on the hunt. A wolf hunts in packs. She's more like the lion on the
And
hunt.
it's really interesting how, without giving anything away, it really does seem that her loyalties are going to be tested pretty soon, and she's probably going to have to decide who she's going to side with. And so it's going to be really interesting to watch the next several episodes, because the show's is going to be closing, or it's going to be finishing pretty soon. And they are going to episode 26, right? Or are they going to 24? Okay.
Yes, they are.
Not.
Yes, they are. It's probably going to go on a few more episodes. I don't see, although it is anime, but I don't see it finishing on 24 or 25. I see it on 26, hopefully. And the manga is still going on
Oh, I was
anyway,
going to ask you
so.
about the manga, actually. So this
I don't think the manga.
is it based on the manga, or is it
I
the
haven't seen.
current?
Unfortunately, I haven't translated the manga out of
Okay.
Taiwan, so I can't say that. You know, but my guess is it should be pretty close. Of course, I can dig up the Hong Kongese copies on the net. It's still in Mandarin Chinese, so.
Yeah, it's actually really I it's actually it's different from Cowboy Bebop, like in one really important respect, which is that it's neither really a serial in which there's one entire long story, nor is it really episodic. Generally, I think in the first season they had kind of two episode arcs, but now, like in the second season, they're going into three, four, even five episode arcs. And it actually I really kind of like this setup. I think it's actually one thing that makes it unique, because actually I can't think of any other anime that does that really consistently. Most like for a lot of comedy anime, for instance, I notice what they do is that they come up with a lot of really episodic shows at the beginning, and then they try to shoehorn a plot near the end. But
Which usually
which
ruins
either
it,
either ru either
makes it
makes it
worse.
worse or makes it really it's or transitions really clumsy. And like that's how I felt about Trigun. Like that's I don't know about you, but yeah, that's how I felt about Trigun.
I hate that Lawson T style. Now, I want Ravi to put a couple bullets through his head, for sure.
Except that he's actually also really insanely powerful too. But
Well, it's impossible. It's impossible to
yeah, it's
beat. Yeah.
impossible. But yeah.
But yeah, in a nutshell, you want plot, you got plot, you want action, you got action, you want romance, well, look somewhere else. There's Black Lagoon for you.
Yep, and it's probably the perfect action show that's currently on right now. So I,
And animated very well too, I might add.
The only criticism I might sort of level, and it's really a small criticism, is that it really does seem that they don't quite know how to end the episodes, like each episode. Like I've always felt that a lot of the episode endings are really abrupt. Which so this is a show that actually really works well if you watch a whole bunch of episodes at once. Because it pretty much just runs right one into each other, like for the for each like individual arc. So
Well, they're in an absolute evil world. There isn't much. There it is not going to be an ending. Just everybody inherently wants a good ending. Don't deny it, everyone. I know you
it's
do.
just that it's well, I'm not really even talking about whether it's a happy ending or good ending or anything like that. It's more like how like at the end of every the like the point where they cut off every episode, it always feels really abrupt. Like you especially like in the middle of a plot arc, it just
Oh, they fade
like
into
they just fade
music.
into
Yeah.
music and like at, oh
That's like Gundam
at like at
Seedai.
a, at a, at a moment that sometimes seems awfully random to me. And so again like I said like my recommendation would be that for people to watch it like in bunches at a time. That's how I've watched it. And rather than like one episode at a, like a week or something like that. Like I would contrast this actually like with Honey and Clover, where in Honey and Clover they always found the exact right place to stop the episode, even if it was in the middle of a story, where when the music came in, it really felt really right. That was But like I said, this is a really, really minor criticism because overall the show holds up really, really well. And so out of like 5 stars, how many stars would you give it so far? I guess we'd probably have to give it a full review after the show's over again.
I'm not very picky when it comes to great action show. Well, actually, technically, I can be picky if it's one of those dumbass mecha shit, but I guess I'll give it, with a 4.
I'm going to agree with you there. I'm going to give it a really solid 4. It's a far above average show that does what it sets out to do very well. It's probably not the greatest show of all time, but it's still very solid. Yeah. You get what you want and more. And I don't see much more you can ask out of an anime. So that's Black Lagoon for you.
Yes.
4 out of 5. That's our grade. Anyway, that pretty much does it for our very first episode of Scattered Cells. Thank you for listening, for all of you listening out there. And please feel free to leave comments on the website or send us email.
Or flames.
And if your claim is creative and funny enough, we will probably read it on air. So please be careful. And so this is Michael Hua.
Yes, we know where you live. That's old, I know, but we know where you live.
I know how to trace IP addresses. So watch out. Anyway, this is Michael Huang, and sign off.
This is Rayman Hsu.